Chapter 10. Marcus moved quickly through the halls of Coruscant's massive Senate building, heading for Jace Malcolm's office in the military wing. 40 standard years ago, the senators would have been horrified if a military officer, even the supreme commander of all Republic forces, had an office in the same building. Back then, most politicians had openly called for a massive decrease in the size of the Republic fleet and a reduction in the number of soldiers. The idea of a full-scale galactic war seemed preposterous, and the desire to shrink the scope and budget of the armed forces was virtually unanimous. 4 decades of war against the re-emerged Sith Empire had changed things significantly. When the Treaty of Coruscant had been forced on the Republic years ago, some believed a lasting peace with the Empire was possible. But in the last 18 months, the uneasy truce had collapsed, and a return to full-scale hostilities silenced all talk of peace in the halls of the Senate. As the tide of war shifted to the Republic's favor, the idea of ending the Imperial threat once and for all began to gain support. The Republic's growing military resolve was championed by the newly elected Chancellor Suresh. The former governor of Terrace, few had seen her as a candidate for the Republic's highest political position, but she swept to power on a wave of aggressive anti-imperial sentiment. Unlike others vying to succeed Chancellor Janaris, she hadn't promised to bring the Republic peace. She promised victory. Within days of her election, she enacted all 36 wartime provisions listed in the Galactic Constitution, greatly expanding the powers and responsibilities of her office and allowing her to make major political appointments without Senate approval. There had been some behind the scenes grumbling at the sudden increase in executive power, but Suresh quickly quieted the dissenters by appointing the wildly popular Jace Malcolm as the new Supreme Commander. The director had studied Suresh's rapid rise to power carefully. It was impossible not to be impressed by her ambition and her political brilliance. Tapping Jace for Supreme Commander had been a particularly astute move. Nobody would speak out against such a long-serving Republic hero. His selection legitimized every appointment that came after. Suresh had found the perfect candidate to solidify her support, and she'd put the military under the charge of a man who was as eager to wipe out the Republic's imperial foes as she was. Not that the director minded. He also believed crushing the Empire was key to securing the Republic, and he was ready to show how valuable SIS would be to that cause. Operation Transom hadn't ended as planned. Operation Endgame was his chance to make up for it. As he approached Jace's office, Marcus allowed himself a hint of a smile. They'd presented the Supreme Commander with a basic outline of Operation Endgame just yesterday, and Jace had already scheduled a meeting to discuss it in more detail. Clearly, he'd been impressed. The director was more than a little impressed himself. The analytics team had gone above and beyond for this project. They'd managed to pull everything together in just over a week, thanks largely to Theron's contributions. Marcus had been worried about Theron's potentially disruptive impact when he'd assigned him to the team, though he'd hoped the nature of their research might make the transition from fieldwork easier. Much to the director's relief, as soon as Theron realized analytics was working on a way to put an end to Darth Mekkis's legacy once and for all, he'd thrown himself into the work.
"Maybe he's maturing," Marcus thought,